हरिः ॐ सहनवावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Anti Lila, Chapter 20, the Shikshasakam Prayers. Page 76. This is part of Humbler Than a Blade of Grass. Okay. Is this Lord Chaitanya speaking? He begins to think. No, this is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Therefore, as long as I am not freed by the Lord's mercy from the chains of material bondage, to go through life, I must embrace the path of Yukta Vairagya, and together with Sambandhi Gyan, accept only enough matter for my bare necessities, just to keep my body and spirit together. The misery stemming from poverty, disease, calamity, old age, etc., and happiness due to wealth, health, beauty, education, etc., are all prarabdha karmic reactions, which I shall inevitably have to experience. Loss and gain, birth and death, suffering and joy, are in no way connected to spiritual life. Rather, they are wholly mundane, thus inconsequential to my real life. I will therefore approach the Lord with utmost humility and pray, O Krishna, O Govinda, O Lord of my heart, when will I be engaged in your divine service? Kindly be merciful upon this lowly creature and quickly accept me as your servitor. In this mood, I shall either enter the forest or remain home, and living frugally, I shall somehow sustain my life. Although grass is matter, its ego is natural and proportionate to it, whereas my false ego, made of my gross and subtle bodies, is utterly illusory because it is not connected to my original spiritual self. It is only proper, therefore, that I become more humble than a blade of grass. Right? Because the grass, then, its humility is in proportion to what it is. Right? You know, like that. You know, you don't see, you know, the grass walking down the road, you know, cutting a profile or anything. While the living entity, then, because they are conscious, they are aware of these things, then the problem comes up is they're not seeing things in connection with their real self, so it becomes very weird, right? So this point here is that the misery is coming from the material world, and the happiness due to the material world all parabdha karma. And so that's going to come anyway. Then you just have to deal with that. Right? So, but one has to understand is they don't actually have anything to do with your spiritual life. And spiritual life means how you're seeing things in connection with Krishna, how you're absorbing yourself in Krishna, and things like that. Right? So,
Now, I was about to ask, some people have a humble disposition by mm-hmm. nature. But that humility doesn't mean that by the vision of scriptures they see themselves as humble servant of Krishna.
Yes, it doesn't. Right? It doesn't, but at the same time it's a quality that's useful because it is a form, because as we were discussing, was it yesterday? About the qualities, borrowed or...
No, today morning.
Yeah, today morning, but also was it last night, Maharaj? Yeah.
Yes.
So.
Day before.
Tuesday. Oh. Sorry, I didn't need to talk. Yes, I, no, 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 there was no class.
Secret club.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it even comes with snacks now. So, the even though our conditioned nature is a borrowed nature, because it's only there due to previous karma like that, previous activities, that we have a particular conditioned nature in a particular way. And so, then according to your work, then Supersoul then awards you with, you know, the particular facilities, the qualities, the situation, and everything, so that you can carry on pursuing that karmic, you know, arc that you were working at. Right? So then those qualities are there for that, but it's still in the material world. You talk about what's pious and what's impious. But now the materialist is looking at it, pious and impious, because he's looking at dharma, artha, kama. Or, you know, for some, then moksha. And so then they're useful in those spheres. But in reality, the definition is coming from its use in devotional service. That's the actual point. Right? Either in specifically in principle, but also, sometimes, if it's according to the Shastra, especially if we're dealing with the sattvic aspects, if it's sattvic, then it'll be in form, will also be useful in devotional service. But if we're talking about Rajas, Tamas, then sometimes those details aren't what the form you'd use. But something like, you have a guru, that remains. Just that you don't have a transcendental guru, you may have, like, remember once we were driving, I can't remember what was the reason. I think it was, you're coming from Calcutta, and you know when you get to Krishnagar, and when you first get to Krishnagar, then the road turns off this way to go, you know, to Pantatirtha and all that. Yeah. But there is a small gully that goes straight. Mm-hmm. You know, you're coming into the end. So sometimes if it gets a jam over there, you just go in there and come out through. Mm-hmm. So we'd gone that way when we were going through the city. At some point, he just suddenly, you know, abruptly stops the car, gets out of the car, walks out of the car. And then some guy on the street, he goes up to him, obviously, like, touches his feet and says a few things and this and that. The other guy's looking very, you know, like that. And, you know, and then comes back to the car and sits down and starts driving again. I said, oh, who is that? He's my driving guru. You know, because now he is occupied. He drives cars, and he's making money, and he's maintaining his family. So, my guru, I have to respect my guru. You know, so that principle of having guru, respecting, and all that will be the same. That's the same principle and same activity that's useful in bhakti, but it may not be so useful that your guru is here, who's teaching you how to drive, and that's it. You know, not spiritual life. Does that make sense? So, therefore, they're going to have people will have qualities that they can engage in Krishna service. Right? Now, when they engage them in Krishna service and they're humble there, then it takes on the quality that now the soul is acting in that way. So one starts to act in that principle of these qualities are the nature of the soul. But otherwise, the karmis, it's not the nature of the soul, because they don't relate to it that way. Does this make some sense?
Yeah.
So therefore, they will have that humility. Now, if they see devotional service, they have good association, that humility will do them well, because they're having that humble mood, they'll advance quickly. To one point, it becomes, you know, becomes steady in devotional service, that becomes the quality that is the quality of the soul. But before that, then it will be sentiment. And that humility may do them well in Krishna consciousness or may not. You know, because they're humble and all that, that part's going to be good. But because it's a sentimental thing, if they see others aren't behaving in a way that they expect, because they being humble, they expect others to also have good qualities. And if they don't find them, they may get disappointed and then, you know, give up their pursuit of Krishna consciousness. Because others, then their conditioned nature, those borrowed qualities, aren't necessarily of a... means it may not have cultural qualities, right? Because humility would be generally a cultural quality. Though it's very useful in getting anything done. But you see, nowadays, people strive more for the qualities that mechanically give you success. You know, that determination or focus or use, you know, how you say, what is it about time? You use time properly?
Time management.
Time management, yeah. Like that, and these kind of things. And so in that, it's very cut and dry because it's about them and doing their thing and getting it done. So it's very anamoy. But these, something like humility, that may be, had the aspect that may have a little bit more of pranamoy, or it may come from a religious background or something like this. Does that make sense? So it can, it will always be a useful, but whether they can continue with it and bring it to the point where it there becomes now the quality of, you know, their own ornament. So they're ornaments. That whether it's it becomes a permanent ornament or it's a temporary because of the previous situation. Did that make any sense at all?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Okay.
I wanted to say it, but it does make sense.
Okay.
You've explained it perfectly. I have identified two kinds of people with humility. You've got, you mentioned, first of all, if there's any humility, it will be on the sattvic platform.
Mm.
There are so many people who have no idea about Krishna consciousness, who are in the world of goodness, and goodness does facilitate or nourishes the quality of humility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're in awe of the nature or compassionate or whatever. Mm-hmm. But behind this, there is a very strong false ego.
Of course, because that's why we're saying it's actually borrowed.
Yes.
We simply look at the outside, because that's the thing. If it looks good, it's just like nowadays, you know, if the car looks good, you know, that's going to be a major factor. You know, there's going to be the guy that, you know, what's the engine, what's the torque, what's the this, what's the that, what's the mileage, what's the, so many things like that he may look at. But mostly it looks good, that they like it. You know, think, oh wow, it's got, you know, 900 horsepower, right? You're going through the city at 30 kilometers an hour.
If that.
Yeah, you know, so why do you need something that can do 300? But, you know, it's, ooh, you know, and everybody will look and this and that. And the thing is you just bump into it, right? And it's fiberglass or something. And, you know, the whole fender or the whole thing falls off. And that's 10,000, you know, whatever it is in your local currency, you know? While the other car, there might be a little bit of a dent, you go back home and just whack it with a hammer and everything's good. You know? And so, you know, it's that's the whole thing. It's a show, or the thing, the clothes. It looks great, but it's, you know, it's, what's it made out of? You know, modal or something, which is, you know, what do you call it? It's synthetic.
Yeah.
You know, it's like modal. Oh, it's modal. It's synthetic. You know, it costs, the modal scarf cost as much as the silk one.
Really?
Yeah. How they push it like that. I mean, it's really finely done. You can get modal ones that are much cheaper. But they have ones that's just there. It's like, oh yeah, you want the silk, you want the modal, you want the cashmere, you want the modal cashmere, your modal silk, you want the, you know, you look good. It's like, you know, it's just synthetic, you know. So that's the thing, it's all about the show. If the show looks good, then, you know. So that works in society.
Okay, the other one is, and I know some specific individuals, you know, in the Vaishnava community, not here, but in other places, they present themselves, I mean, just the way they speak and the way they act, they just melt you by their humility, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When you present them an opportunity to work on a project, surrender to a guru, accept a philosophy, hard like a rock. You know, they'll come to you and say, Prabhu, Hare Krishna, you know, all these things.
Yeah, it's just the same thing.
But they will not budge.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just that is the particular conditioned nature. And so for them, they identify with being the nice guy, the humble guy, the fair guy, you know, the just guy, you know, the broad-minded guy, the accommodating guy. And so as long as you deal in such a way and accommodate and respect that, they're cool. But if you ever don't, then you see the, you know, how you say, tough as nails guy. You know, so that's the way so many are. It's just like you see here means because if you're actually intelligent, you know that behaving in a very cultured, nice, considerate way, you get way more done than not being like that. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's I think it's here. You see it with the, you know, Italians, you know, in New York. You see it other places like that. Also in Italy, I was told by one devotee like that, that they'll all be very nice to you, know, especially as a devotee, you know, then they see like a priest, they'll always be very nice to you, very accommodating. And as long as you always act in that way, they'll always act like that. But if you in any way deal with them where you've dealt improperly, yeah, then you have a problem. Like here, the biggest gunda, the local gunda, when they come and deal with us like that, they're so humble. They're like children. Like that, you know. And they'll deal very nice like that. But if you mess up with them, then you've got problems. Like that. So you're going to see that as that intelligent guys. Like I remember one devotee was telling me in New York. This would have been, I'm not sure when it would have been, maybe 80s or... They used to do... For a collection, they used to have a dried fruit cart, fruit and nuts. You know, your little cart, on wheels, you go out like that. So they found this really nice area. I think it was down at like maybe, you know, 30th or somewhere, that side like that. And they were doing really, really well. And there was this kind of, I think it was like a warehouse or something that was open, and they would let him come in and, you know, set his cart and sit and eat his lunch and all that on his break and then go back out. And so after a few days of being there, and he was really happy with it, you know, like that. Then this guy comes in, you know, first class, you know, pinstripe suit, the fedora, the whole thing, you know, the shoes, everything's polished, everything's nice. Comes in, talks to him very, very nicely, you know, just very gently, you know, because you guys are this and that, you know, respect what you're doing, but this is our block. This area is ours. You know, we, what you're doing, we do. So therefore, you please find another area, and then, you know, everything will be comfortable, there'll be no trouble. You know, so being a New Yorker and from wherever he was from, he understood that, you know, you move to another area. Like that, you know, it means how you say, taking up residence inside the Hudson River is not overly, you know, recommended. It's not a great thing.
Reading the sign language, you know, you understand by the sign of it, where will you end?
yeah, you just know. But that's the thing, they'll talk really nice and all that, and as long as you accept it, that, then that's it, there'll be nothing further. Does that make sense?
Otherwise you don't go home tonight. Or you go home in a casket.
No, you won't go home in a casket. You'll be, means, you'll be, I think they call it swimming with the fishes. Because in a casket, you can take things back. So, therefore, you see is that those who are really good, they can deal in that way. Like even, you know, it's like those who have, especially generationally, or they themselves have done very well, they'll always deal really nicely. But if you don't reciprocate that, then they won't deal anymore with you and you will have trouble. So that would be what you're bumping into. Is they just know that it's a proper way to deal. They get things done, and not only that, in the society it's highly respected. And so then, you know, you make a profit on both sides. Then you're going to see those that melt your heart with humility and are humble. So that will be, you'll see, is the advancement is there. So someone, it'll be sentiment. Someone, it'll be, they know it's the proper way to get things done, but at the same time, they expect results, you know, and respect. You know, that's why it mentions, you know, in this verse that you have, means that's coming up, is that you're respecting others but not looking for respect. Because many people who respect others, you know, in the culture, you have to respect them back. It's reciprocal. How much they dealt with you, you have to deal with them. And if you don't, they won't deal with you anymore. You know, then of course the lowest is, he expects respect, doesn't give any respect. Right? And then just above that, the guy, he doesn't respect anybody, but doesn't expect anything. You know, like Diogenes in his barrel or something. You know, you have those kind of, those intellectuals, they don't get into the social scene, but they don't expect you to deal with them anything special either. So the top is, you offer respect, but you don't look for respect. But that second one, then, you respect others, but you expect respect. That, you'll see that's a lot. So if you're always respecting others, not looking for respect, none of those positions will bother you. You can deal with everybody. That's the thing. The devotee can deal with all four of those. Right? Well, the guy, the second level, can only deal with people who respect. Does that make sense?
Rupa Goswami gives the Panchanga Bhakti so that devotees have an opportunity to get to pure devotion. And these five actually cannot be realized, or, you know, you cannot reach a high level unless you develop humility. You just won't have any access, whether it's the Dham, the chanting, the devotee. It just won't work.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who has integrity, who has the desire to make spiritual advancement, they will have be honest with themselves. Look, you know, if you're a humble, you're not going anywhere. It's just not going to happen. And when you look at all the acharyas, that they made it because of that only quality of humility. And not only that, but when they're on the highest platform, they feel they're not qualified.
Yes. Yes, what you're saying there is correct, and I would say though I would add a few things to it, that the five main things, these are the five that the soul can directly relate to.
Yes.
Despite conditioning.
Yes.
The other ones, then maybe you'll have more or less things with it, or inclination towards, depending upon your background and facility and all that. So. It's not just that they're given for that, these are the eternal main points. So hearing and chanting, Jiva Goswami points out that hearing and chanting, when you come to the point of prema, it still goes on.
Yes.
You're in the spiritual world, it still goes on. So it's not that it's just a method of sadhana for
not
here.
A springboard.
Yes, it's not a springboard. The other point that I would mention, I mean, it would come up as, I think it came up, was it this morning? We were talking about the qualities, and that there's the two ways of looking at it. The one is that the bhakti creates the humility, the other is the humility creates the bhakti.
Mm.
So, Jiva Goswami is making that point, is that you have to be very, very careful. No, I think it was Bhaktivinoda Thakur was even talking about that. That was that other day. These other actions, let's say like worshipping the demigods, this and that, devotees have no need to worship them because they're worshipping Krishna. But he also pointed out they don't have the qualification to worship them. You know? So it has to be, it should be clear, is that we have to be careful. Points have to be made, and people have to understand the importance of humility. But that humility, it would be their concept that they're bringing themselves in line with Krishna, they're surrendering to Krishna. Now, whether you necessarily see that humility manifest as a operational quality in which they perform action, there may be a delay in that. And so that delay still won't inhibit them progressing in devotional service. But we see is that when they come to the transcendental platform, then all these qualities naturally are manifest. The 26 qualities, you know, the devotee has of the demigods, then you see is that that's where it's going to get very dynamic. So basically you can say from what means from nishta, it becomes steady, so then it becomes now, it's progressive. But from ruchi, then it will become very dynamic. And then you'll see these qualities coming very, very quickly. But the point is it's actually the other way around. Because you're surrendering to Krishna, so it does have that aspect of humility, but then you start to see it in the character. But before that, you may or may not see it. That one's trying to cultivate it, that's nice, but it's not that only by cultivating it, then you'll get. You know, it's by cultivating devotion. That means then you have to be humble towards Krishna and the devotees. So it's the point is your devotional service is what's generating the humility.
Yes.
That has to be seen, because otherwise some will take it farther, you know, because you're saying it in the context of that.
Yes.
But others will say, no, but unless you have good qualities, you can't practice bhakti. And so they're actually making mistakes. What was that technical point you made on that? Do you remember that?
Which one was it?
The one about the thinking that the qualities themselves are what generate bhakti. Unless you have good qualities, it doesn't generate bhakti, rather than the other way around. You gave some...
Oh, that from Prema Pradipa, where where the argument was given by people of, like, you know, this Brahma Samaj kind of thing.
Oh, yes, yes.
They said that because bhakti is not inherent to the jiva, that's their base standard. So all the emotions should be controlled by logic, by your rational thinking. So because of that, then it turns out in this way that...
Yeah, then you control that, then you can develop. And that's then you're looking at it, the logical. You know, if you drop it down to the socio-political, economic, judicial kind of level, which is the popular one nowadays, then it still has that, they're trying to control that. You, unless you regulate your life according to the contemporary social system, you know, this more so-called progressive system, then you can't actually progress higher. Does that make sense? So we always have to be very careful of that one. Does that make sense? Because I'm only bringing that because of the context of you were talking about the devotees who humility is there, but you know it's either sentimental or it's conditional.
Yes, conditional. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the sentimental person, it also its positive use is also conditional, but it's that they expect others to. They're looking at things sentimentally and they expect it to run nicely that way. And when it doesn't, they become bewildered and distracted. But the second one you gave, you know, the, how you say, Thunderbolt and Rose one, was that one, then they have conditions on which they will act like that. As long as you reciprocate, then that's very good.
I mean, you have an example of humility of Srila Prabhupada or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who can be very, very forceful preachers.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and at the same time have extreme humility.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing is Krishna consciousness, these contradictions are the problem. Because they're all reposed in Krishna.
Yeah.
Because you're bold, but not for yourself,
for yourself.
Krishna.
Yes.
You know, it's like Prabhupada says, he says, no, but you know, you're saying this about the soul, and the Prabhupada says, no, these are the facts. You can't argue the facts. You want to discuss how to use, how to understand, you know, these kind of things. That can be discussed, but whether the fact is true or not, that's not up for discussion. Shastra says that's the way it is. Krishna spoke to the sun god, you know, millions of years ago. That's just a fact. It's not up for discussion. He's just pointing that out. I spoke to him. I remember that. You don't, though you were there. You know, that's the thing. You're jiva, you don't remember. I'm the Supreme Lord, I remember. You know what I'm saying? But the point is that, oh no, but how could he speak? That's not up for discussion. It's not that it's dogma, it's just that why would you need to discuss it?
Well, John Bard, you know, carrying the palanquin and being totally submissive. And when it comes down to, you know, the philosophy, he doesn't mince his words.
Yes, 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 yes.
Prabhupada once told one devotee that humility means being aggressive to receive Lord's mercy. So that's the one, the context of.
Well, there's a morning walk conversation. I think it was in Paris. And Hari Vilas asked Prabhupada, he says, Prabhupada, can you tell me what humility is? And Prabhupada turned and goes, humility is when you are convinced without a shadow of a doubt that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's humility.
That's where I think it's only to Hari Vilas Prabhu this statement also.
If you're not convinced, you're not wrong.
It can't be. Because for the materialist, then it's not. They may be pious, but it's only an anga of their piety.
Yeah.
You know, like that. But as long if they adjust that piety, then the humility goes also. You know, it's just that I inevitably have to experience the misery coming from poverty, disease, calamity, old age, etc., and happiness due to wealth, health, beauty, education, etc. So experience, loss, gain, birth, death, suffering, and joy are not connected to the spiritual life. So when you see everything connected to Krishna, that's when you can be humble, because these things are just going on and you deal with them as they're functioning. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to, you just do your service, what has to be done, and what's going on, that's what you deal with. You know, you don't have to worry about what was there in the past or what will be there in the future. Right? You just deal with it in real time. Like that. You know, if you have duties that, you know, you have to make sure that you do stuff like, let's say, you buy things in season, so now is the potato season. So you have it, you buy the potatoes, you store them. You know, it's rice season, you buy the rice, you store it. You know, that's what grihasthas will do, they'll keep all their things like that, because it's a duty, not because you're worried about the future. That's the thing, you perform your duty, then all that's taken care of. It mentions all those things, like even spices, you buy them in season. You know, because when the jira comes out, it's very cheap. You buy a whole, how much you need for the year, because it comes once a year. So.
Good to know when I go to Chennai Chowk to get the spices.
Yeah. Get
jira for the year.
Yeah. It means just in Hong Kong, you might have to adjust that they took the kitchen, turned it into a walk-in wardrobe. They might have to take it back and make it a kitchen go down.
Now, Maharaj, what about humility within the institution? In other words, it's related to sadhana bhakti, it's related to Vaishnava community, it's related to Vaishnava sangha, but the institution requires devotees to be humble. Prabhu, you're not humble, you're not following your authority.
Yes, but that's there, but what has to also be appreciated is that works very nicely when everybody follows that, right? It means if everybody followed that you have to follow your authority, then it wouldn't even come up as a discussion. Does that make sense? It'll come up as a discussion when some follow and some don't. Right? So then if you're dealing with, individuals, you know, then those that follow, then either their service or their area will go nicely, and those that don't, then their service and their area will have problems. Right? Because for Krishna, it's following the authority, following parampara, so it's important, because anyway, you're doing the activity, the expertise at it is Krishna's energy anyway. So it's not that it's, you know, You know what I'm saying? So for Ganga, that you're offering Ganga water back into the Ganga, it's not about the Ganga water you're offering. That's the great thing. It's the devotion in which you're doing it. And so, yeah. So one has to understand is everybody in the society is an individual. Everybody has to follow. Right? But a problem comes up means that's your traditional thing, that's your leadership and that kind of approach to it. An institution means a group of individuals who work together under a particular established code by which you can see to a sustainable progression of results because of, you know, it works always in one way. You know, because if you do one thing in one way all the time, it'll work. You know, sometimes it doesn't. So if something works 60% of the time, if you always do it, you'll always make 60% profit. 40% you'll lose. Problem is when people don't stick to one thing. They do the 60, and then when it loses, they switch to this. But then when it goes back to the 60, then they've lost here also. So then they always lose. You have a pattern, you follow it. So that takes self-control, that takes this, that, following your thought. So the acharyas have given the system, the mission is given by Lord Chaitanya, the Goswamis, they've given it to you know, it's come down the parampara to Srila Prabhupada, he's given that to us. So that the institution as given by the acharyas through Srila Prabhupada, that everybody has to be submissive to. You know what I'm saying? And so when we say someone who's not, it will create problem for them because everybody's an individual. So it doesn't matter where you're situated. So a problem may come up is, yes, an individual doesn't, they don't see the importance, so they don't do their service, they don't get along with others, and so they create problem for the institution, for the, you know, in from the perspective of those managing the institution or leading the institution. But at the same time, if someone who's leading the institution or managing it, if they're not following that same principle, it will create more trouble. So one has to understand is that the institution is made up of individuals. So when we blur that by these modern bureaucratic methods, that you have, you know, how you say, you have the animals in the farmer's house, you know, sitting around the dinner table, and nobody gets to talk to them, see them, they just sit there and make their plans, and then you're supposed to, you know, just be submissive. Then you do that, you'll benefit, you'll go back to Godhead. But as far as the institution goes, is they have to be doing that also. You know what I'm saying? So that's what comes down, is that many will say about from the institutional point of view that the institution is the most important. No, the individual development of individuals is the most important. But of that, then the development of somebody in a leadership position is very essential. So that's why leadership is what makes societies work, not bureaucrats. You know, bureaucrats have never in history made society work. They assist leadership in smooth running. But there's no example anywhere in history where bureaucracy ran society and it worked. Nothing, nowhere. You know what I'm saying? So that's why you see the more bureaucratic it comes, the more it falls apart. And then when there's some strong leadership, then it comes together and then it starts to work because they set the example. It goes, you know, it's just, does that make sense? You know, it's just like, you know, that example of, a Macedonian with the ringlets.
Alexander.
But I couldn't hear.
Alexander.
Yes, Alexander. So they were in a place, it was very difficult, there was no water. Somehow or another they got together one helmet of water. You know, that's all the water they had. They brought it to Alexander, that he said, if my men don't drink, I don't drink. So because he's committed to the men are committed to him. You know, but if it was just this closed room of guys in the room and people bring the water and it disappears in the room, you don't know what happens and all this and that. And then they drank water, but no one else is committed. So that has to be seen, is that it runs both ways. As individuals have to be committed to the institution because it's given by the acharyas, so that's it. But the leaders of the institution have to be committed to, you know, their authority. You know what I'm saying? So it goes back. They can say, we're on the top, but no, you're not. It means technically it's there, but who's above you? You know, and it goes all the way back to Rupa Goswami. So it has to be. It has to work that way. One has to represent. Right? So if that's done by everybody, then it works. And when leadership does that, then everybody else, then they do that. They don't do that, then why would anybody else? So if there's a problem in society and no one wants to follow authority, you know where to look. No? Yeah. So, you know, you're saying this humbler in a blade of grass, that's used by everybody. But sometimes sometimes it's taken that being humble means that you are weak. But it's actually only someone who's strong can be humble. Right? So when we say humble, we're not meaning that one is self-deprecating, that one can't function or do anything. You know, that's a mode of ignorance. We're talking about humility coming from, you know, minimum goodness, but ideally pure goodness, that you see yourself as the servant of the Lord, like that. And then, you know, that's how you see, you have that faith in the Lord, so then everything follows.
What did they say? Humility is not thinking.
Low self-esteem.
No,
it's not thinking that you're less, it's thinking less of yourself.
Yes. That's very good. Yeah, but that's the low self-esteem. So that's how it's generally taken in kind of the Western environment. So then when they get into that really humble, then they can't function. They can't do anything.
That's right.
You know, or to do something, then they have to be God. You know, it's either I'm, you know, garbage or God. You know, there's nothing in between. You know, so it's just, no, we're a servant of God. And that's nice, low self-esteem.
You don't think less of yourself. You don't think less of yourself. You think yourself. Mm-hmm. You don't think yourself to be less.
Less.
You think less of yourself.
Okay. Yeah. So that's. Yeah. So now they're trying the humility in the West and the political to make everybody feel. In other words, whoever's been in power now, they have to think that they're rat bags and everything is their problem and everything like that. So they have to think less of themselves so that the others can puff themselves up and then all feel good, yes, okay, you know. But it's the same thing, you know. Useless. Okay, more tolerant than a tree. Now to explain the real purport of Taror Api Sahishnuna. More tolerant than a tree. The tree is considered tolerant because it never neglects to offer its cooling shade and succulent fruits even to the woodcutter who is going to cut it down. The devotee of Lord Krishna is kinder still because he is compassionate to every living entity, whether friend or foe, desiring only their highest welfare. One who chants offenselessly is overwhelmed with thoughts of others' well-being. Thus, the second special quality, compassion without envy, is being described. Compassion without envy. He thinks, "Oh my Lord, my friends and companions and all living entities are so unfortunate. How can they develop love and attraction for chanting your all auspicious names? They are sopped down in the quagmire of family attachment, wealth, property, success, failures, loss and profit, joys and sorrows, birth and death, etc. All because they are blinded by Maya." Also, the most interesting here is that he's bringing in both. Generally, we like to point out, you know, it's that you're saying, quagmire family attachment. Then we're generally going to talk about the attachments, you know, death, failure, you know, just the miseries that are there. But he's pointing out both. Because you suffer on both of them. You know?
Yeah, I was just hearing recently, and then there was an explanation that materialists, whether they lose or gain, they always lose. And spiritualists, whether they lose or gain, they always gain. Mm. And then the explanation was, you know, matter, it's not, you know, it's not sustainable. So if you gain, it appears that you gain, but it's gonna go soon. If you lose, it's obvious you lost it. But then for the spiritualist, if you gain, you know, it's for Krishna, and if you lose, you learn a lesson, so that you can advance in Krishna consciousness. So it's lose-lose for them, and that's win-win for us. But we have to be in that mood, otherwise we'll lament and or like here, you know, overjoying and like that. Mm-hmm. So, it was very interesting, actually, you know, psychologically how it works.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, because also when you gain, then there's the thought you're going to lose. You have to maintain it. Others get envious. They started, you know, finding fault. And so, whatever your position. Yeah. All because they are blinded by Maya. There is not the slightest indication that they are disgusted with a futile material existence filled with anarthas or unwanted things. They are slowly strangling on the rope of unlimited desires for mundane sense gratification, all the while busying themselves in vacuous, mindless pursuits of fruitive action that promise them divine pleasures and of empirical knowledge that tantalize them with the promise of liberation. How can these persons become attracted to self-realization? Praying to the Lord in this way, the devotee's heart is flooded with spiritual emotions, and he begins to sing loudly. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nastyeva, Nastyeva, Nastyeva Gatiranyata. In the age of Kali, there is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way than chanting the holy name, chanting the holy name, chanting the holy name of the Lord Hari. Right, so that tolerance is there, yeah, because they have that compassion without envy. Because you can be non-envious if there's nothing to gain. There's nothing materially to gain. You don't mind if people have things, and it doesn't bother you if they don't have things. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So humility is the key to continuous chanting.
Yes, yes. Yeah, then you can chant nicely. Because if you want to chant nicely, then these qualities develop. Being aware of these qualities, you try to apply. So our endeavor for these good qualities is when the opportunity comes up to apply it, we try to apply it. There's not a separate endeavor to develop them. Does that make sense? It's just in the performance, the natural performance of your duties, you're going to have opportunities where you have to be humble, you have to be tolerant, you have to be respectful to others. You don't look for respect. That will come up on its own. And especially if we have a problem in an area, then we see is that it's nicely arranged that those ones are the ones that are, you know, how you say, disturbed. You know, it's just like you move around all day and there's no problem, you know. But let's say you bump your toe. Everything bumps into your toe. You know what I'm saying? Your toe hurts. Everything. Even the wind blows, it hurts your toe. You know, so it's like that. So if let's say we have a lot of pride, then Maya will always be poking that one. So we'll always have opportunities to try to apply it. Then that we're trying to apply it, and we're trying to please Krishna, then that is then where Krishna being pleased, then we start to develop. Because even if you say, no, but we separately, you know, just on the social platform and that, try to do all these things, but why? You know, why on the social platform do we have to be humble? you know, because you're supposed to be, you know, interact, respect people, be nice, but why? Who said? Right? So we know that Krishna says, because he sees all living entities as parts and parcels of Krishna. So then it becomes very natural that this is what is required, what is needed, you know, what is expected. But on the material platform, then why do you have to be like that? You know, we say because it'll be nice for us. I want to be dealt with nicely, so there's the rule that everybody should be nice to each other. I'll support that platform. Because I want to be dealt with nicely. If I don't care, persons who don't care about anyone deals with them nicely are not talking about everybody should be kind with each other, nice to each other. No, they don't say that. So it's something that one sees as one's own, you know, value in dharma, artha, kama, or moksha, then that's the one that is propounded. Does that make sense? You know, so it's always those things. So only devotees then are doing these things because it's what pleases Krishna, it's in line with Krishna. Freedom from false prestige. The word amani describes the third quality of the devotee who chants offenselessly. A spotless heart, free, so we see, who chants, says describes the third quality of the devotee who chants offenselessly. So he chants offenselessly, therefore these four qualities are there. Right? So therefore, we should be aware of them and value them, that we try to apply them whenever we have the opportunity, whether we're good at applying it or not. We try. And then with time, then Krishna reciprocates that. Does that make sense? Okay, this is Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Yes, and so they have these qualities, and so then we try to follow in the footsteps and emulate these qualities, but they're not separately practiced other than our application in devotional service. Okay. All gross, a spotless heart free from false ego and false prestige. All gross and subtle bodily designations are derived from the mode of ignorance. Yogic mystic powers, material opulence, natural beauty, high birth, strength, social status, influence over others, etc., are but a function of false ego and are incompatible with real spiritual identity. Right? So therefore, this social status, influence over others, like that, all these things, they're used in Krishna's service, they're engaged, that's yukta vairagya, but they're on the material platform, function of the false ego. So it's saying, you know, bringing out from the karmis, they're professional, we have to be professional. But if we take on that attitude of professional, it's false ego. It has nothing to do with devotional service. If we're saying, look, the karmis, they're committed to, you know, developing personally in their material field. Therefore, they're very professional, work very hard. We as devotees should at least minimally be doing that. We should be doing more. You know, Prabhupada says, we should be working harder than the karmis because we want to please Krishna. That's a different for pointing out they work hard because they have their result. We should be working hard because we want to please Krishna. That's one. But if you take, oh, they're professional and how they do things, if we do like that, our society will work great.
But devotees start their day after breakfast at 10 o'clock in the morning. By that time, people have already worked about 6 hours.
That's why devotees work more.
I mean, the devotees and the non-devotees get up at the same time. They just do different things.
Yeah. In other words, one goes to the gym, one goes to the temple.
Well, one gets into the subway and sits for hours to get to work at the factory. Mm-hmm.
The guy's going to Calcutta from here.
That's true. I guess I was thinking of the more well-to-do. Okay, good point.
They go first to the temple, then to the gym.
Yeah. You can do both. But the point is devotees work more.
The Prabhupada talks about lazy intelligence, right?
But lazy intelligence doesn't mean that you're not in, the endeavor is not there. It just means you physically don't have to do it.
Right.
You have people nicest examples means that you know you see. I mean, of course, Prabhupada's the best example, but that you see in management styles is how you say on the conch, was it conch?
Yeah,
this building, conch building. Then I think the third floor. The one where if you come out, you can go onto that little roof above the deities.
Yes, that's the second floor.
That's the second floor.
Yeah, second floor.
Yeah, there in that one, that somebody would sit there, and they would know everything that's going on the whole planet, just sitting at their desk. And then they would call people that, you know, the people they would need to call. They would talk to them about different things, send them off to get things done. That's lazy intelligent. They just sat there. And then once everybody's gone, they would turn around to their desk and start doing their writing work or reading or stuff like that. No?
Yeah.
Like that. Well, if you had the other building, Lotus Building, you onto the top, onto the roof, and onto the western side, that person was active intelligent.
Yes.
Means it didn't matter where you were doing something wrong, they walked into the room. And so, what's going on? You know. And so, two times, three times a day, around the whole project, the whole project. Walked around, saw everything, then called people, then dealt with them and stuff like that. But they were like that, very active, intelligent. So both were, you know, and Prabhupada said, right and left hand.
Yeah, I remember when I was here in 82, every morning, Abhananda is on the second floor of the Lotus building at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And you! Over there, you! Clean this! Every morning, remember the cleaning?
Yeah.
Full cleaning.
Yeah.
You, come back! What are you doing in the garden? What's your business?
So like that. So the real spiritual identity is servant of Krishna. And so we do that very well. So Prabhupada said we're professional spiritualists. But we avoid the false ego of the material, successful person. To completely reject these false designations is to have a spotless heart, devoid of mundane ego and false prestige. He who, in spite of having every reason to be proud, demonstrates tolerance, humility, and a spotless heart is a fit candidate to chant purely. So, in spite of every reason to be proud, so it's one thing you have nothing to be proud about, and then to be humble, or free from false prestige. Okay, that's natural, you should be. That's why it's lower than a blade of grass. You know. And I think the lower than the straw in the street. So we generally say blade of grass because in most places, where have they seen the straw in the street? Right? It's like if you... where Mahatma Gandhi wrote, Prabhupada's house used to be across from the Radha Govinda right here. You'll see there's this kind of, these fancy kind of buildings and that, and there's this, suddenly goes in this far out kind of like courtyard that in its day must have been very impressive. But that's full of the wholesale fruit market.
Yeah.
Like that. You know, I said, yeah. So, when you go in there, all you see on the ground is straw. because it's always wet, it's always that, so the straw from the thing, when you unpack the fruit, it just goes on the road because you can walk on it. You don't need it, it's just walked on. So it's the only good is that everybody walks on it and it gets muddy. So, yeah.
So Lord Chaitanya, when he composed that verse, lower than the strong streams because it goes as in straw. If you had to rewrite the verse today, it'd be lower than the plastic bag on the street.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Because plastic bags are everywhere.
Yeah, nobody cares. A devotee of Krishna, whether he is a Brahmana living in a house, must subdue the pride of being a Brahmana. And if he is living a renounced life in the forest, must conquer the supercilious, false prestigious attitude. Careful to avoid becoming proud of being a Brahmana, of being a renunciate, he should simply concentrate on the lotus feet of Krishna and chant his holy name, offering all respect to others. Next, the word manada means to offer all respects to others. This is the fourth symptom of the devotee who chants without offenses. He understands that all living entities are eternal servants of Lord Krishna, so he is never envious of anyone. He pleases everyone with sweet and sincere words, and his exemplary life brings benediction to the whole world. In this world, he offers his respect to distinguished personalities and learned Brahmins. And to Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and other demigods, he offers his obeisances with utmost humility, praying to them to increase his devotion to Lord Krishna. To elevated Vaishnavas and pure devotees, he offers his services with heart and soul. So everyone is sincere in words and exemplary life. Yeah. Chanting the holy name adorned with these four blessed qualities is the highest success of human life. This is the message of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the most magnanimous incarnation and savior of the fallen souls of Kali Yuga. All good? Okay, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says what he talked about. The living entity is by constitution an eternal servant of Lord Krishna, and therefore his eternal dharma is to chant the holy names of the Supreme Lord, whether he simply transits this material world or permanently enters the spiritual sky. There is no better means for humanity's all-around benefit and success other than chanting the holy name. Chanting brings good fortune to others and all auspiciousness to oneself. How to avoid nama-parada? This shloka was spoken for the sole purpose of focusing how to avoid nama-parada and nama-bhas in chanting. One whose intelligence shies away from Krishna and rushes instead towards the intoxicants of material enjoyment can never perceive his true infinitesimal stature. By nature, one who tries to be an enjoyer does not realize the reality of his insignificance, nor can he be tolerant. He is not at all inclined to give up his false ego and false prestige. The gross materialist is unwilling, even incapable of acknowledging anyone as an equal. The Vaishnava who experiences ecstasy in the Lord's name is unwilling, even incapable of acknowledging anyone as an equal. The Vaishnava experiences ecstasy in the Lord's name, on the other hand, is humbler than a blade of glass and more tolerant than a tree. Right, so the gross materialist can't see everyone as an equal because he thinks he's better than everybody. While we see the advanced Vaishnava, then he doesn't see anyone as equal because he sees them all as superior to him.
It's the story of the Brahmacharis at the ashram of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who were pointing the finger and criticizing one devotee. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati overheard their conversation.
Mm.
And he walked out and said, well, at least he hangs his mudra on the line very nicely.
Okay, so that devotee, He is unconcerned, even unwilling to receive respect, and is eager to offer respects to others. Such an elevated soul alone is worthy of chanting constantly. When these pure souls offer their praise and worship to the Guru and senior Vaishnavas, they do so out of manada. And when they give advice to disciples and sadhakas to chant, they encourage them with words of appreciation. In this case, they exhibit their innate quality of amanina, desiring no respect or praise in return. Glories of humility. A pure devotee understands that these words of praise and appreciation are not empty mundane vauntings, excessive praises, but acknowledgement of spiritual qualities. And if the foolish misinterpret this as mundane, then he tolerates their railings, thus exhibiting deep forbearance. This is his nature. The unalloyed Vaishnava, who chants offenselessly, considers himself to be lower than the straw in the street that is trampled by the walking masses. A true saint never thinks himself to be a Vaishnava or claims to be a guru. He regards himself humbly as a disciple of the whole world and as the most meek and fallen soul, knowing every atom and the infinitesimal spirit soul as the residence of Lord Krishna. He never mistreats anyone as his inferior. He is not wanting anything, nor does he require anything from anyone. Even if others are envious and spiteful of him, he never retaliates. On the contrary, he prays for the well-being of his tormentors. Pure devotee is faithful to his guru. Devotee who chants the holy name offenselessly never rejects the devotional process he received from his guru, nor introduces a new method, replacing the Maha Mantra with some concocted and imaginary rhyme. A Vaishnava's humility cannot be doubted or challenged if he preaches the glories of the holy name and writes books, as long as he strictly adheres to the instructions of his guru. One who tries to cheat and deceive others by making a show of humility, although he lacks it just to gain deep adoration, is not truly. One who tries to cheat and deceive others by making a show of humility, although he lacks it just to gain cheap adoration, is not truly humble. Maybe put a comma after the show of humility there, after he lacks it. And then again, after gain cheap adoration, or something there, so that you catch. The Mahabhagavat, who is constantly chanting, does not see the material world as something for him to exploit for personal gain, but as diverse paraphernalia for rendering service to Lord Krishna, his associates and devotees. He does not think that this world is his to enjoy. Although he becomes proficient in chanting, he never considers giving up the Maha Mantra. He is not interested in propagating new ideas and opinions. He realizes that to regard oneself as a guru of Vaishnava devotees strikes the death knell of his humility. Footnote 36. Knell is a sound usually of a bell that signifies the end of something, usually death. It is commonly used at funerals. Like you have I don't know if they still do it, but it used to be like in the villages and the church, when somebody died and all that, then the bells would ring. Mm-hmm. Like that is the thing, so that's the death knell.
It's not a death knell, it's not the last nail on the coffin.
That's also there, the nail, yes.
The nail.
Yeah, that. But it just means it's like that. Because it's also mentioned, I'm not aware of that. Who speaks? Oh, I think it's Haridas Thakur. When he's discussing the holy name, the 10 offenses and these things with Lord Chaitanya, maybe there he's describing the point that that one can elevate oneself up to the platform of Bhava, be off the material platform, but if he maintains that pride of being advanced and a pride of being a guru of devotees, he can get stuck at that platform of bhava, you know, and won't move forward to prema. He'll have to give those up before moving to prema. And so that's why he says that one who thinks he's a guru of Vaishnava of devotees, no, it's just what you're the servant of the spiritual master and you're helping these devotees. And by it's, you know, helping them, you yourself become trained. Like it's known in the educational circles that if you teach, you learn more than if you were in the class. So, so you're thinking, no, I'm the teacher, I'm the, but no, but you're the one getting the most benefits. So you're learning through the students, because you know it, and, you know, you understand it, but when you teach it, you have to explain it and go through the questions are asked. It makes you think, you know, like that's where he sees. When Narad Muni asks a question to Brahma, then he thanks him for that, or we see Sukadev and Parikrit Maharaj. Parikrit asks a nice question there, or anyone, I think also Markandeya and Vidura, or it's Uddhava and Vidura, something like this. It's always you see is when they ask a nice question, then it's, oh, I mean, think about it, you get to talk about Krishna more. Like that. So that aspect is there. The plain truth is that one who does not heed Lord Chaitanya's instructions in the Shikshastaka prayers is chasing after material gains. His sole intention is to satisfy his senses, thereby forgetting his true spiritual identity. He begins to hanker for recognition and the status of an elevated Vaishnava and guru, but the holy name can never be chanted by such offenders. Even an otherwise sincere and faithful disciple cannot become worthy of hearing and chanting the pure holy name if he hears from such an offender. In his Bhajan Rahasya, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, some other relevant shlokas follow, from Srimad Bhagavatam 2.1.11. O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. And from Mukundamala, 37. O fool, O you rascal, this constantly mutable body is under attack from innumerable attachments and diseases, and death is certain. What remedial measures have you undertaken? Simply drink the medicine of Krishna's name, which is the cure for all diseases.
That's Bhaktivinoda Thakur, right?
That's from Mukundamala.
Oh, Mukundamala.
He, Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Bhajan Rahasya is quoting. But I think that comes in one of the songs.
I know,
in his poetry. Yeah,
it's in the
yeah. No, but you can see it's familiar.
Yeah.
Verses 27 to 30. Shikshastaka verse 4. Introduction. 3:20, 27 to 28. As Lord Chaitanya spoke in this way, his humility, dainya, increased, and he began praying to Krishna that he could discharge pure devotional service. Wherever there is a relationship of love of Godhead, its natural symptom is that the devotee does not think himself a devotee. Instead, he always thinks that he has not even a drop of love for Krishna. Srila Prabhupada. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments that persons who are actually very poor because they possess not even a drop of love of Godhead or pure devotional service, falsely advertise themselves as great devotees, although they cannot at any time relish the transcendental bliss of devotional service. A class of so-called devotees known as Prakriti Sahajiyas sometimes display devotional symptoms to exhibit their good fortune. They are pretending, however, because these devotional features are only external. The Prakriti Sahajis exhibit these symptoms to advertise the so-called advancement in love of Krishna. But instead of praising the Prakriti Sahajis for the symptoms of transcendental ecstasy, pure devotees do not like to associate with them. It is not advisable to equate the Prakriti Sahajis with pure devotees. When one is actually advanced in ecstatic love of Krishna, he does not try to advertise himself. Instead, he endeavors more and more to render service to the Lord. The Prakriti Sahajiyas sometimes criticize pure devotees by calling them philosophers, learned scholars, knowers of the truth, or minute observers, but not devotees. On the other hand, they depict themselves as the most advanced, transcendentally blissful devotees, deeply absorbed in devotional service and mad to taste transcendental mellows. Well, they also describe themselves as the most advanced devotees in spontaneous love, as knowers of transcendental mellows, as the topmost devotees in conjugal love of Krishna, and so on. Not actually knowing the transcendental nature of love of Godhead, they accept their material emotions to be indicative of advancement. In this way, they pollute the process of devotional service. To try to become writers of Vaishnava literature, they introduce their material conceptions of life into pure devotional service. Because of their material conceptions, they advertise themselves as knowers of transcendental mellows, but they do not understand the transcendental nature of devotional service. Shikshastaka, verse 4. O Lord of the universe, I do not desire material wealth, materialistic followers, a beautiful wife, or fruit of activities described in flowery language. All I want, life after life, is unmotivated devotional service to you. Shikshastaka 4 explained, 3:20-30. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, My dear Lord Krishna, I do not want material wealth from you, nor do I want followers, a beautiful wife, or the results of fruit of activities. I only pray that by your causeless mercy you give me pure devotional service to you, life after life. In his Bhajranahasya, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, It is imperative that in the very beginning, the sincere sadhaka attentively hears Guru chanting the holy name, and thereafter himself chant the holy name, free from all nama-paradas. The process of chanting guarantees that the four qualities described in the previous sloka will gradually blossom in his heart. Conversely, if the sadhaka's attachment to sensual pleasure is not severed, then his original spiritual identity does not become manifest, in which case bhakti, which is the intrinsic flavor of the Lord's ladini potency, cannot be transformed into bhava or amorous spiritual mellows. Sadhana bhakti means the process of chanting, and the pure form of sadhana bhakti is clearly indicated in the phrase nadanam najanam. The principal symptom of bhakti is loving devotional service to Lord Krishna. The secondary symptom is freedom from all desires, anyavilashita sunyam. Outside of the path of bhakti, freedom from all desires outside the path of bhakti. Can you put this anyavilashita shunyam after the path of bhakti? Freed from all desires outside the path of bhakti, then put anyavilashita shunyam, which is untainted by karma and jnana. As long as loving devotion to Krishna, anukulyena krishnanu shilanam, is encumbered by desires for karma, jnana, yoga, the highest stage of loving devotional service, or uttama bhakti, will not manifest. I think we need to come after jnana also. It remains as a mere shadow of devotion, or bhakti abhas. Dissipating shadow bhakti. The instructions in the shloka are meant to dissipate this very shadow bhakti. Quote, O Lord, I do not hanker for wealth, dhanam, a follower, janam, or beautiful verses, sundarim kavitam. Here, dhanam refers to wealth of piety accrued when one strictly follows the path of varnashram dharma and related karmakanda activities. It further implies the paraphernalia one needs to fulfill his sensual desires in this life and to ensure further luxury and sensuality with the next birth in the heavenly planets. Dhanam refers to the wife, sons, servants, subjects, friends, and relatives. The king of education. The proper understanding of education and learning is that one generates attraction and attachment for the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. The phrase sundarim kavitam thus does not refer to the scriptural narrations of Lord Krishna's pastimes, but to mundane literature or other dry philosophical and esoteric technical subjects. Yeah, something that you get a taste from that on the material. Lord Chaitanya, Chaitanya's prayers begs not for such trivialities, but to be engaged, birth after birth, in the loving service of the sweet Lord of the heart, to develop unstinting devotion, devoid of any and all conditional demands. Unconditional means a devotion uncorrupted by inferior desires for self-aggrandizement and carnal pleasure. A pristine spiritual love overflowing the heart with transcendental mellows. Undeviating and pure love means to satisfy Lord Sri Krishna only. Victory depends on the Lord's will. We did it the other way around this time. The soul's struggle to triumph over repeated birth and death and other material miseries is beyond him. For such victory depends entirely upon the Supreme Lord's will. Yet all miseries automatically cease when, by the Lord's desire, one is rescued from the cycle of birth and death. Therefore, what is the efficacy of a gross materialistic prayer that is contradictory to the precepts of pure devotion? Lord Chaitanya's prayer is this: until such time as the cycle of birth and death is brought to an end by the grace of God, let me have unconditional devotion to his lotus feet life after life, regardless of what my material situation may be. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. O Lord of the universe, I have no desire for material wealth, following, or beautiful poetry. You are the object of my worship and devotional love, life after life. I only pray that I may have unconditional love and devotion at your lotus feet. Sundarim Kavitam refers to the religious principles of the Vedas. Dhanam refers to wealth, and Jana means wife, children, relatives, etc. I do not merely abhor sense gratification derived through religiosity, wealth, and lust, but I am appalled at the idea of temporary mukti, or liberation from the cycle of birth and death. I refuse to be enticed by these four Vedic goals, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, but only want to render service at your lotus feet. So, yes.
Maharaj? So this verse number four, where does it fall in the ladder of Shvaratam?
Ruchi.
Ruchi.
The previous one is Nishtha.
Nishtha. So, and then Chetulaparna Majanam is...
That's a general talking about the no. That will be the second verse. Second verse will talk about all those.
Okay.
The first verse is, you know, establishing the process and the glory of the holy name,
yes.
And how it goes from every aspect is contained within it, from that beginning all the way to the end. Then you start the next verse, because you see is the Anishta Bhakti, that will be those first 1, 2, 3, 4. So that's Anishta Bhakti.
Yes.
So then the third verse will be Nishta Bhakti. Right? Because now because it says the pure chanting means you've given up those things. Then when one has a taste, one doesn't have any interest in any of these material things.
So
before that you're endeavoring and all that, but when the taste comes, then it just goes.
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah. Gonna make it. And after this, then you have the midnight kirtan.
Yeah, we have not midnight kirtan.
Jai. So, you won't have a problem that tomorrow there's no class then.
No,
no.
We actually experienced some sattvic adhikaras.
Yes, yes. Hair standing on end.
Yes. Juice flowing.
But the eyes.
Well, well. It's opposite of stai. Stai means glasses, but this is vyabhichara.
Yeah. Sanctuary.
Sanctuary. It goes against the stai.
Okay. Yeah. King Kulashekhar's prayer captures this mood. O my Supreme Lord, I do not want to accumulate heaps of piety by performing sacrifices and executing prescribed duties as recommended in the scriptures. Nor do I want great opulence and sense gratification. Whatever reactions I am destined to suffer for my past misdeeds, let them come. What I cherish is the hope that my deep devotion to your lotus feet may remain undeviating in its firmness birth after birth. Panchopasana is covered in personalism. Persons who follow Vedic religiosity worship the sun god. One who desires wealth worships Ganesh. Okay, Vedic religiosity worships the sun god because that would be the fame and all these different things. Those craving carnal pleasures worship Kali or Durga. Those who strive for liberation worship Lord Shiva. And those who worship Lord Vishnu, knowing to be the source of the Vedas, do so for material motives. They are not pure devotees. This type of Vedic worship is known as Panchopasana, or worship of the five primary demigods. Whether such ritualistic so-called followers of the Vedas worship with or without material desires, they are in fact worshipping impersonal Brahman.
This is put in order by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in one of his books, I think Krishna Samhita. They put the first craving for carnal pleasures by worship Kali and Durga, that's the lowest. Then Vedic religiosity, sun god is the next, and then Ganesh, and then Shiva, and then Vishnu. That's the order. Moves up.
Oh, okay. There's also, I've seen where this talks about what also level of consciousness that you have is that anamoya will be that you know, for the material desires. Then sun god is for life in general, and Ganesh is for specific groups.
Yeah.
You know, it's like for all people of the world, then that's sun god. If it's just, you know, how you say, BLM or something, that'll be Ganesh. Then you know, performing the Dharma and everything, you know, you get all the benefits, the Dharma, then that will be Vishnu, and then Shiva will be liberation.
Yeah.
That's I've seen that. That might be Brahma Samhita. Is it?
Well, Brahma Samhita mentions the worship of those gods, but it's in a different context.
Yeah, but it's later in the Chintamani prayers, I think. Panchopashana, each demigod is dealt with. Panchopashana is dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
Might be there or something. I kind of vaguely remember that. But then here's, because when you're dealing with that, it has to be able to take care of all angles.
Yeah.
It has to be able to take care of all angles. So then you see Vedic religiosity, worship the sun god, so someone's very religious, very pious, and all that, he does that. So that's why it would be very natural for the gopis to go out and worship the sun god. Because then their mothers-in-law will think, yes, they're becoming very nice, good, you know, chaste wives, and that. Therefore, everything will go very auspicious in the family. Then they'll become very wealthy and get plenty of cows and all that. Then they'll, at least, you know, that's how it's enunciated by Jativa. You know, so like that, so then it becomes a very nice thing. And also then the you know, other technical points, the connection there, then
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki.